Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon, and you are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow. I really need to stop saying that it's a Friday afternoon, because it's not. Well, it could be. There's a 1 in 7 chance that it is, depending on your time zone. And now I'm going to start slightly confusing myself. Anything you hear on today's show, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow. I just about said that. I think after 7 years that I figured it out. And Sideshow.com. In very recent news, well, news that's about to hit your radar just shortly in the next couple of weeks, May 2018 is the reopening of the Temperate House at Kew. It closed for a period of about 5 years, and it's probably one of the largest projects that I've ever seen undertaken of that scale. Let me see. There's around 500 plants that were taken out, and they were housed in a temporary nursery, and there was an incredible 10,000 plants about to go back in. Miranda, I'm going to try and pronounce this right, because I think, to be fair, well, I don't know. We try it. Let me see if I got it. Is it Janatka? Is that good?
Oh, perfect.
And Miranda is based at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew, and you work in the tropical nursery. I think I've just about got it right.
That's perfect.
Okay, Miranda, you're very welcome to the Sideshow. Explain this to me like I'm a two-year-old, first of all. I know you're not based in the Temperate House in Kew, but what is a little bit the backstory on that, and then, I guess, how and why are we on the phone, or what's your involvement in that part there?
Sure. Okay. I mean, as you very nicely explained, the Temperate House is a really important building, not just at Kew, but in the world. It's the largest Victorian glass house in the world. It's twice as big as our Palm House that people are very familiar with and is open at the moment. And so temperate zone plants, meaning they're not tropical, but they need something warmer than our sort of UK climate. So as you said, 5 years it's been shut. People are really excited about it being open. It's a £41 million restoration project. It was built in 1860, designed by Decimus Burton, who also did the Palm House, and it took them 40 years to complete. So there's a lot of hype about this project reopening on the 5th of May 2018.
Your job in the tropical nursery and what you're doing at this moment in time, tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Okay. So I work in the tropical nursery, which is a behind the scenes part of Kew. And the name tropical is probably slightly misleading because I work in the temperate unit. So tropical as opposed to hardy. We have arid and moist and team temperate, which is me and my colleague. And we're looking after the plants, including some of the plants that go back into the temperate house. So we've been doing a lot of the propagation. I joined the team last summer, so there's been a lot going on before then. My supervisor, Rebecca, has been doing a lot of the propagation work. But it's been great to get involved and be doing some of the climbers, the herbaceous bits and pieces. As you can imagine, you start off with the stuff that's going to take longer, and as you get closer, the stuff that's quicker to turn around, you know, coming up to the annual plants. So we're propagating the plants, and then they're getting shipped back into the temperate house.
For those of you listening at home, Miranda's line is a little bit coming and going. We're back to that ye olde thing of when you used to have to ring the operator and he'd pull out one wire and stick it somewhere in there. With all of the modern technology in place, it still somehow or another seems to happen. Miranda, I gathered the Rebecca you're talking about. Is that Rebecca Hilgenhoff?
That is, at Passiflora Tree on Twitter. So she's been at Kew a while as well, and she's my supervisor. So, yes, she's been doing a lot of propagation work.
Well, we're due to talk to Rebecca, spoiler alert, and we'll have her on an upcoming show. But that's something entirely different. But I think this is probably the little bit of the hot potato, if you want to call it that, at the minute. Miranda, when you're at a dinner party where they've got Ferrero Rocher hors d'oeuvres and that kind of thing, and people say, I'm a medical, yeah, okay, I'm a doctor, that's fine. What do you do? Well, I get to say, well, I build gardens. That's the easiest answer I can give. In your case, what do you say, or what do you title yourself?
I'm a botanical collections horticulturalist. It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is a bit of a mouthful.
Quite hard. A lot of blank stares, I've got to admit, to non-horticultural people who don't really get what goes on.
We hear this now and again in the press releases, and we've discussed it hit or ditter on the Sideshow with, in fact, one of your friends, Cathy Rawlinson of the Hardy Plant Society. And we were talking about young people, inverted commas, or new people. people, or even with Mark Gregory, you know, young people into horticulture, not young as per age, but just newer or fresher minds into the thing. You are, in fact, younger than me. I know that just by looking at your profile photograph on Twitter and the fact that I've got letters after my name in horticulture, etc. But how young, old are you, can I ask, Miranda? And what was
that's fine.
Okay. And what was your, I guess, your career path or trajectory to where you are now?
Wow, sure. In a nutshell, really, I suppose. I studied history of art at university at the Courtauld in London, which I really enjoyed. So I'm really into aesthetics and history and art. I went into teaching. I was a primary school teacher for about 3 or 4 years and got involved with sort of community gardening, which I really enjoyed. And then and then I want to take a bit of a break. To be honest with you, my father passed away. And I think when you lose someone, you do kind of realize how short life is, and you sort of think, wow, you know, what do I want to do? So let's do it now. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to give myself a year and I'm going to do something I really want to do. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get a qualification in horticulture because it's something I really enjoy doing. And I went off to Capel Manor and did my BTEC level 3. And from that point, I saw training options specifically at Kew. And I thought, okay, one more year. And then I'll go back. I really enjoyed teaching, and I felt like horticulture was a bit of an indulgence for me because it's something creative, something artistic, something scientific, outside. I couldn't really believe I could do it as a job. And I think that's something quite relevant to what you talk about of new people, younger people. It's not something they say to you at school necessarily, you know, do you want to be a horticulturalist? So, you know, 1 year became two, became three, became four. I suppose I'm in my fifth year now. And there's not really a looking back at this point. You know, you become more aware. You find ways of where you can go and what you can do. And it's just been such an incredible ride that I'm now not a teacher doing a bit of horticulture. I'm a horticulturalist doing a bit of teaching.
To be quite fair about this, you're a horticulturalist. Hold on, because this is a sticking point with some people.
Sure.
Horticulturalist or horticultureist?
I'm told it's ist.
I'm told it's ist as well. I used to have horticulturalist on my business cards and then I changed it. But you're a horticulturist with a difference.
No, sure. No, I completely get what you're saying. Q is very important for me in terms of where I want to be doing horticulture. I've always loved glass. I did the traineeship in glass at Kew. They now do a specialist option and you can do glass as one of those. And then I did the 3-year diploma, the Kew diploma, which I recommend to anyone and everyone. If you know someone who's interested in horticulture, it's the best of the best. You know, it's what you want to go and do if you really want to study horticulture inside out, from genetics to landscape design. It's a fabulous course. So at Kew, as I said, it brings together for me art, science and training and studying and history. It's more than just the garden. I think it's such an incredible institution. So, I mean, if you've been there, you know. Have you been there, Peter?
Yeah, I've been to Kew, but I've but I've gone incognito, if that makes any sense to you. I went as the tourist, which is a little bit different to let me show you the behind the pantomime curtains, if you want. It's like when I get talking to Andrew Wilson and Gavin McWilliam and they're saying, oh, here's how we put the garden together. And in Kate Gold's case, I said when I interviewed her that in 17, I walked her garden about 4 or 5 times and I still couldn't figure out how they did what they did. And that caught my mind. And in Q's thing, the one thing I loved was that it appeared, and I know horticulturally how it works, but then I get talking to somebody like yourself or Rebecca and it's a little bit, now I've figured out the equation, now I know the thing, now I know how you did that. I wanted to see it. I like it when I get to walk behind the other people who are paying in the door and they're going, oh, that's nice. And I'm, like, my head's gone, how come they like that? I can't stand that plant, you know?
I think I understand. So you see stuff you don't like, or you're listening to them saying they don't like it. But
Well, I know when Matt Candeis interviewed me, well, I was talking to him about plants that were, I guess, around in 1980 in Ireland. And I think I alluded that whoever invented the Hebe-Rachiensis shouldn't be allowed to vote. It's one of the most boring plants in the planet. But we all have those that we love a little bit more, I guess.
No, definitely. And I think it makes it very hard to go to garden centres. You know, I think that's what you mean. You know, you get very accustomed to quite kind of specialist plants and wanting to grow something really unusual and does something quite exciting. But Q absolutely is that.
What's an average day for you? Do you, because of what you do you have to wear shorts and a t-shirt when in fact it's snowing outside?
It can be. So temperate. So my zone goes down to 10 degrees. So I'm not in shorts at the moment, but in the summer it'll be pretty hot. And I'll go in, I'll check on the plants, the zones I'm in charge of, and I've got a student in one of them at the moment. So I've got a large 700 plants, and half of which are moving in and out towards the temperate house, and we're sort of holding one back of each that we'll keep in the nursery while the rest will go out for display in the temperate house. But I'll check on the plants, I'll do some watering, maybe, you know, potentially some feeding, and then we're seed sowing or we're pollinating, we're taking cuttings. The propagation is the magic bit for me. You know, I really enjoy doing the propagation work. Or we're making up displays as well. We do propagation for the water lily house as well. So that's quite good fun. We had to sow a rice field recently for the Princess of Wales Conservatory and some for the water lily house. And that was really nice because I put a video of that on Twitter, which I think I remember you commenting on. And there was a school teacher that said to me, "Oh, this is great. You know, can I do this at a school with some kids?" And I was so happy. I replied to saying, yes, you know, this is where you could get some seed. And I thought, this is why social media is fantastic, because we're able to communicate what we're doing behind the scenes. And it's inspiring people to have a go at home or in school. So that's really nice to share some of our work like that.
You were growing the rice, if I remember correctly, for the, was it the Orchid Festival?
Yes, yes. So mostly for the Orchid Festival. Some of it will go into the Water Lily House as well. But there's a massive field of it in the Thailand Festival in the Princess of Wales Conservatory.
I remember seeing that video pop up on Twitter, and I was like a kid in a sweet shop. I was just, gee, wow. Like, I know I make gardens, and people will turn around and say, look, oh, there's the before and there's the after. And that bit in the middle, again, what I was referring to about seeing behind the curtains, I never show the bit in the middle, or I rarely show the being constructed and the muddy bit and people with frostbite fingers, et cetera, et cetera, and machines sometimes not doing as they should do, and it causing a mild delay, and how you catch back up on that time. To put it into one context, in your case, the one thing I love about Q is that it always looks immaculate on one hand, and then on the other hand, I just see you and you're growing rice, and I'm going, holy God, is somebody put a podium and just let her stand up there in the middle of the thing and we'll just applaud her, you know? People can pay in and point at you. It's quite fascinating, but it's for the big kid in my head, it never ceases to make me smile what you get up to.
No, and it's exhilarating for us, because every challenge is sort of, how are we going to do this? You know, we're kind of putting together trays and finding a space, and we're doing it over December and January, which, as you know, isn't the best time to grow anything, you know, try and germinate rice. But it's really nice what you say about the way Q looks, because I think that's massively important. And, you know, people are so excited about the temperate house opening up. And I think we put on an amazing show, you know, whether it's the Orchid Festival, whether it's any of the display houses changing their displays over, whether it's the bedding, people come to see the show, and whether they're kind of botanically minded or not, they come and they're excited and they're impressed. And I think that's such an important part of drip feeding conservation work and what we do. You know, there's a lot of plants we work with that are extinct in the wild, are very rare and endangered. And if you catch people's eye first, and if they're interested, they're more likely to care. And I think that's a really important thing that I think we do really, really well at Q. We're very happy to explain and sort of educate and get people on board, which is obviously important.
Well, I've always compared horticulture to falling in love, and I know some people tend to giggle at that. I was about to say, in a nutshell, if you write on a chalkboard the equation for falling in love, you don't get to see the pretty thing and then maybe figure out how it works. And in the Q sense, to make my analogy make some form of sense, I see the pretty thing and I'm attracted to it, and then I say, how did you manage to do that? A la the rice video. So in a nutshell, yes, I have to say I applaud and I love love exactly what you do. For the most part, I get how it all happens, but I still love the fact that it always woos me in and makes me want to go and spend more time. And that in horticulture is absolutely wonderful. In an industry, I guess, again, as discussed with Cathy Rawlinson, it can get a little bit of a bad rap for maybe being for a different generation or genre.
Right.
And in your case, I'm just sitting there going, holy McGoley. For those listening at home, Miranda, explain to me, what is a temperate house?
A temperate house. So it's not tropical. It doesn't have quite the high temperatures, but it won't go below 4 degrees. So you're not going to get anything frozen. So you're looking at parts of the world that we consider temperate, to Australia, New Zealand, parts of South Africa. And it enables to us to grow and display some of the really exciting plants that fall into those areas and those regions, I suppose, in a nutshell.
And explain to me then, how does the tropical nursery work? I gather that's all entirely inside as well, or for the greater part?
Oh, absolutely. And the tropical nursery, each September we have an open weekend. So if anybody ever wants to see behind the scenes, other than obviously following me on Twitter or any of my very talented colleagues, they should definitely come along. So the tropical nursery is almost like a big, beautiful library, because we've got all the plants almost, you can imagine, in order. I mean, for me, it's the hidden gem. And there's 21 different glass houses. So we can keep plants very much in the humidity and the temperature that we want to. And visiting researchers, and this is the important bit, really, the visiting researchers, someone examining DNA of plants, looking for medicinal properties. We've got the Jodrell laboratories at Kew, but we have external visitors as well. Anyone wanting to come in and study a genus or a species can come in and find those plants, and they've got that material. So it's a really special thing. You'll know my colleague, the plant messiah, Carlos. So he describes Kew quite nicely as a Noah's Ark for plants. And I think that's probably a really nice way of considering it. And even more so the nursery, which is, you know, sort of tucked away and where all our precious things are.
Are you a little bit the drummer or the bass player in the band, Miranda? Because you tend to do the thing that is hugely important. And the people walk through the door, and I say this slightly jestfully, you know, your job is done.
Sure. No, sure. And I suppose it's what you get pleasure out of. And on the diploma, every 3 months you're moved around. So I had a 3 months where I was looking after the water lily house, which was wonderful. And I spent 3 months in the palm house, and I've done the Princess of Wales Conservatory during the Orchid Festival, and looked after the Victorias in the pond and done a lot of display work. And it's incredibly rewarding. And as you say, people are really impressed. And it's really exciting to kind of share that and witness how exciting. With the water lily house, I'd have people come in the mornings, and I'd deadheaded the water lily flowers that had gone over, and I'd leave them by the door so people could come in and smell them as they came in. And it's almost kind of a religious experience. People come in and you can see them enjoying the space. And it's very exciting. You think, you get what I get, and this is what this is about. You know, I think we, as horticulturalists, we kind of owe to try and show people what this great thing nature is. That sounds a bit patronizing, doesn't it? But, you know, kind of, there's something really yummy and exciting and delicious about plants, and it's great if we can show that. But to answer your question, sorry. For me, the other thing, propagation is key. I mean, I love making cakes and decorating them, you know, and 100 times over, I'd rather be doing that than, you know, than be at the front with them disappearing off. You know, we're experimenting, we're trialing, we're getting seed coming up from the Millennium Seed Bank, and working with curating of the collections, where there's that sort of freedom, I suppose, to really focus on some of the work that I'm interested in. So it's a toss-up, but it's a bit of almost, I suppose, like a kitchen of plants, if that's a fair analogy. So you get to be the chef.
I'll tell you what I took from that conversation was, you make cake. Tick box for the love things in Peter's life. You work with plants, tick another box. And if you drink Guinness, Miranda, I'm going to cut this interview short, and I'm getting on a plane and we're running away together. You do know that.
That's very kind. But it's that cooking process. So you know what I mean, working with plants, you're hands on, and you've got your own space, you know, got our own zones, and I love it. And you've got people there with so much knowledge, and you've got so many resources. And people have their sort of potting sheds you know, or as I've had, and you're doing your gardening at home, you walk around the tropical nursery and you think, goodness me, you know, did I want a sand bench to stick that in? Did I want some ceramics to use? There's so many mediums and resources and people to ask, how would you do this? That you're constantly playing is probably not the right word to use, experimenting, you know, and finding ways to germinate something or get something to set seed, get something to establish. And, you know, we're working on protocols for plants getting back into habitats where they're struggling. I got to go last year to the British Virgin Islands as a travel scholarship and do some training and conservation work out there, which was just mind-blowing, you know, to actually work with some of the plants I've been working with and sharing some of that knowledge. So, no, I love the bit I do. I think the display is fantastic, and we have incredibly creative people involved with that side of it. But I'm a nursery woman, I think.
For those of you listening at home, my semi-half proposal to Miranda, you're right, if you've been paying attention, she didn't say yes, but she didn't say no. There's still hope for me. I'm unsure on the Guinness thing, as by the way, that's a clincher. Yeah, okay, we'll park that bit to one side. Miranda, you also are good friends, and you're quite involved with the Hardy Plant Society. Cathy Rawlinson, again, a former guest of the show, and a fantastic interview that we had with her. One of the things that I guess caught my eye about you was the Plant of the Month blog post that you wrote alongside your colleague.
Oh, alongside my fiance. So there's an answer to your your last question.
Hold on a second. I need to insert some Shania Twain music here. Or who's your woman who sang the thing from?
It's a whole drama, this podcast today.
I'm telling you, that girl from... No, she did the Titanic song. Hold on a sec, we'll cue it in. Yeah, okay. Sorry?
I was just saying super. No, it's lovely for you to bring this up, because this is something I'm really excited about. And I'll speak briefly about my partner, Andrew Luke, who's head gardener of Rest Park, which is a beautiful English heritage garden. So if you're anywhere near the Bedfordshire area, go and visit 3 centuries of landscape design. It's 92 acres. They won gold for Anglian Bloom 2017, and it's a stunning garden. So there we go. I've I've done a little pitch for him, you know. So he's a great plantsman, a fantastic head gardener. He was at Kew for 17 years, so he's got a lot of knowledge. He does a lot of plant collecting as well. So we work together very nicely on those blogs.
The one that you had written together was, yeah, it was a Plant of the Month blog post, and most of them are usually, here's a photograph of a Hamamelis mollis, or here's when it flowers, and here's what it does, and something galanthophile snowdrop at the start of the year, etc., etc. Yours, yeah, was a little bit different, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes, sodshow.com or at sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow. What and how and why are you involved with the Hardy Plant Society, Miranda?
The Hardy Plant Society, I think, obviously, if fascinating organization, and I really enjoyed the podcast you did with Kathy. So I think,
thank you.
And I think Hardy Plants, it's so accessible. You know, I'm very interested in tropical plants, and I'm very interested in orchids, but the Hardy Plant element, I think, is something where I can play with and learn and talk about plants with something that's very relatable to a lot of the general public. You know, I think hardy is such a key word. It's always that question, isn't it, when you talk about plants. But is it hardy? You know, and you say no, people sort of turn off, don't they? You know, it's a nice icebreaker to talk about hardy plants. Something we do, and it's nice to do it together. And we each month we think about a plant that's just coming up. I mean, it's a blog that's been going on before we've been doing it. We've been doing it for about the past year. And the Hardy Plant Society, they offer so much information on their website and in their groups. So you can read several different blogs that they do. And ours is just a kind of a contribution to support that. And it gives us a chance to keep learning and sharing information and you know, and studying plants continually, which is all I think you want to do when you're a plant person.
Well, you kind of went into the history of it a little bit, which is why I liked it. And to go into, or to sidetrack slightly into old Irish fables, it's never a I love you full stop, as in the 1950s black and white movie. It's always a meander. It's never the straight path. It's always the longest way to the easiest place possible. Yours gave a little bit of that to it, which made me look at the plant, I guess, a little bit differently. Number one, I guess, on a couple of levels, how come for a lady who works in a tropical nursery. Number two, not a whole adage of just being a member of a horticultural or gardening club. What endeared you to it? Number two, what keeps you in it?
For the Hardy Plant Society or for the for the blog?
For the Hardy Plant Society.
It's just got every information you might want to see. And the seed list, I think, is absolutely fantastic. We really enjoy, and ironically, we don't actually have outdoor space where we live. We live very close to Kew, which is great, but we don't have outdoor space. So we enjoy the seed list. We enjoy the community of people involved in it. And for me, you know, I walk through the gardens to get to the tropical nursery every day. And I think those outdoor spaces with gardens, it's back to the kitchen analogy. Plants are like ingredients, I think, for me, you know, and you've got your favorite ingredients, you've got your favorite plants. But I think a garden is like a dinner party, you know, and it's like very beautiful about a really nicely done garden and that experience of being outside with plants. So that's, I think the Hardy Plant Society are very good at kind of sharing and discussing. And I hadn't realised, as you know, the Plant Finder, the RHS published, that was the Hardy Plant Society that first sort of set that up all those many years ago, you know. So I think the Hardy Plant Society do a lot of very important things, you know, a lot of exciting things worth joining.
And I can tell you for free that their head office has a poster of me behind Cathy's desk.
She's a fan.
Me and David Hasselhoff together, side by side. I'm only joking. How much is membership for Q for the year? And how much roughly would, let's say, entrance to one of the shows that Q puts on?
So for an adult, it's £16 to go into Q. And any shows that are on at the time are included. So, you know, we just had the Orchid Festival and the International Garden Photographer of the Year. Your admission into Q, you then wander around and walk into wherever you want to go. A day, you will never see all of Q. There is so much. You absolutely don't run out. And no day is the same either, which is the beauty in plants and the outdoors. The seasons bring so many different plants to life. So £16 for the day, £4 for children. And if you're looking at a year membership, I think it's £79 or £69 with direct debit. So if you live nearby or if you're going to go regularly, it's definitely worth it. It's a very special place. It's so peaceful. Once you come into those walls, you know, it's an area of tranquility within London. I always feel like I'm in my own little place. It's sort of the Palm House is this sort of centre of it.
It is a little bit mad to think, though, that slap bang in the centre of London is one of the greatest places. It's not a garden centre, Miranda, and it's not a gardens. And the gardens are the finished product. You never see the plant growing or the struggles that the person had germinating that bit of seed. You only see it in all of its splendour.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, around the gardens, you can see the plants changing. But as you say, there's such an effort to the beauty that we can do with the displays. It is always looking very, very lovely. And it's half an hour from the centre of London. So Kew is sort of southwest London, sort of bordering Surrey, really. So not quite in the in the middle, but not far at all. So it's definitely worth a day trip and bringing a picnic and just seeing plants you won't see anywhere else. It's exciting.
That's another episode of the Sideshow just about to a close. My huge thanks to Miranda Janatka, I think I pronounced that correctly, and the team at Q for making this interview possible. The Temperate House opens in May 2018. Membership details of how to get in, where to go, what to do, Miranda's account details, not her bank account details, her Twitter account details, etc. etc. Just send me a note at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, and Sideshow.com. If you're listening to this in Spotify or iTunes or one of them, don't be afraid to leave a rate and review. Miranda Janatka, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It's been a real pleasure and a wonderful chat. And it's lovely to hear somebody giggle when they're talking about plants so much.
That's all right. Thank you ever so much for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you, Peter.
Excellent. What can I say? That's it. We're done.
Was that all right? Was that kind of what you were hoping for?
Well, I think it was. I think it was.